Hello, everybody, and welcome to Actually Comics. I'm Tristan.
And I'm Bob.
And we're going to be doing this for Wednesday, June 19th. Correct. These are the new comic books coming out this week. And there's some crazy stuff. There's a retelling of the Superman origin for some reason, a new Hellboy book, some other cool stuff.
Yeah.
Pretty excited.
I'm excited, too. I promised last week a new format, but I didn't get far enough into my my thing to pull it off, and we want to deliver a quality podcast.
Oh, so God
damn
it.
Not a fly by the seat of your pants half-ass podcast. So
really?
I mean, sort of.
If you listen to this thing, anyway, no.
No,
perfect.
But it's an attempt to deliver a little bit more content and a little less. I thought it was a way to kind of keep everything more positive.
Make it edgy.
And also keep it edgy.
Yeah.
But anyway, so format change upcoming, but delayed briefly. For now, we're just going to talk about new comics that came out.
Okay. So we'll just kind of blow through some stuff. And
yeah, let's blow through it.
Like, things like Savage Sword of Conan number 6 came out.
It did.
I think you have a pretty good idea of what went on in Savage Sword of Conan, if you know Conan.
Can I just say that the artist on Savage Sword of Conan is Luke Ross, who has been around for a real long
stretch. I don't
know
Luke Ross.
He's been around since the 80s, and it's really strong artwork.
Original Savage Sword.
Yeah, and it's like, I love it when these guys that have, like, you don't haven't seen, maybe seen much of them in recent years, but, like, they've been around for a long time, and then they come out with this, like, stuff that's, like, super contemporary, but also, I don't know, just really good.
It feels vintage, and it feels contemporary at the same time.
Yeah.
I really dig
it. Yeah, I dug it. Yeah. Should we talk about this, though?
Do we want to talk about this right up at the top?
No, okay. We're putting it off.
We'll put it off.
So, coming up, let's
talk about this because it's great.
You know, so my favorite War of the Realms crossover came out, and it happened to be Deadpool number 14. I thought this was really clever and fun. I can't really talk about why without spoiling key things, but I would say spoiler, like no preconceived, just pick up Deadpool number 14 and check it out. Like, it's actually a really fun, funny, strong issue where the characterization is very much in line with the Deadpool of the film, but the story is very much in line with the Deadpool of the comics, and just clever. I thought it was very clever and
cool.
funny and good.
All right. Miles Morales Spider-Man number 7.
Yeah, it came out.
Yeah. It's still good.
Yeah.
It's a great comic if you like Miles. It's still quality.
It's still quality.
Usagi Yojimbo number 1.
Yes.
IDW is relaunching Usagi Yojimbo.
Yeah.
It is still Stan Sakai doing everything.
Yep.
And it still looks amazing.
Yes. What is it? Bunyagi? Is that what it is?
Yes.
Bunyagi. And Bunyagi is
Bunraku.
Bunraku.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. I should really not be a total asshole when I talk about stuff.
Bunraku.
Bunraku. And Bunraku is, as I learned from reading this book, a Japanese puppet art form. And that obviously plays into the story in an interesting way. And I love Usagi.
Yeah.
It's great.
It really is. It's so hard to talk about something like Usagi Yojimbo because it's been around for so long. And it feels like, of course you know Usagi Yojimbo, but the fact is that people have lived and died in the time since I first read Usagi Yojimbo.
Yeah, totally.
And it's like, there's a whole generation that has no idea that this is like one of the most beloved comics of all time. And so, by the way, Usagi Yojimbo is one of the greatest comics of all time. And I don't know, like, what furries would have done with their lives if this hadn't existed.
Yeah.
It's like one of the first anthro comics, I think, of all time as well.
Huh. Yeah, I guess that's right.
It's like, it's a very big deal, so.
And I have no idea where I got it, because I have never met Stan Sakai, but I still have a comic book backing board sized print of Usagi signed by Stan Sakai.
That's amazing.
I just ended up with sometime.
He's
in my
the
comic
goddamn best.
Yeah, he's great.
He really is.
I love Usagi.
Such a good dude.
Usagi, not Usagi.
Usagi. Usagi.
This comic is not soggy. It is crisp and fresh.
Okay. War of the Realms War Scrolls.
That's an anthology tie-in series for the War of the Realms, starring Daredevil and Doctor Doom and the Hulk.
There's some crazy, crazy She-Hulk stuff in this that I really enjoy.
That's really the key. The one that I was into of those three was the Hulk one.
Especially when she's like gigantic and deformed. She's so muscular. Yeah. And then she's still making out with Thor, and Thor's still into it. Well, love it.
And then also, yeah, that's definitely cool. I also like that the kind of classic Hulk personality is now Jennifer Walters and not Bruce Banner, where Bruce Banner is more horror oriented. Yeah. Now you still can get that Hulk smash rah, kind of storytelling, but then it's also like, yeah, the Hulk kisses Thor and stuff.
I will admit I do miss Jennifer Walters. Jennifer, yeah, Walters is one of my favorite Marvel characters.
Yes.
And so having her missing, because she has this she and Daredevil are both like, they're the two lawyers that you think of when you think of in the Marvel universe.
Yes.
But she is, I don't know, her law stories are much more compelling than his for some reason. Like, yeah, his tend to be kind of like just like diversions before they get back to punching.
Yeah.
And hers seem to be like the driving story element, and they tend to be fun.
And that was kind of the Dan Slott thing, where he superhero lawyer, which I thought was like the best way, where she was still She-Hulk, but she was the lawyer, and it wasn't like switching back and forth. And I thought that was,
yeah,
probably my favorite take on She-Hulk as well.
Yeah, I can't say enough good things about that Dan Slott run.
Yeah,
that is one of my favorite runs of comics of all time. It's just fun and funny and silly, and Andy the Android is one of my favorite characters. Yeah. And his entrance and exit from that series were both brilliant.
Yeah.
Nah, just loved it. Cool. So good.
I should revisit it because I don't remember his exit.
Oh my god.
It
was heartwarming.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's cool. Andy the Android.
Awesome Android, even.
The awesome.
He couldn't talk, so he had a little slate that he'd write all of his words on.
Yeah, totally.
War of Realms Spider-Man.
They made it through three issues of this thing, and he never put on that goddamn hat.
So sorry.
I don't know how he's on the cover every time. Every time has the cover with the hat, no hat in the comic. But either way, you have good things to say about this comic, and you should
say them. I do. It really does. It has some of my favorite Spider-Man dialogue of all time. Some of it's very fun and very funny. Nice. I love the War of Realms dialogue just in general. Hmm. It has been really crisp and perfect to each character, and I've absolutely loved like the main War of Realms storyline. I don't know. I just super dig it.
I also like that we've already said crisp twice in this podcast.
Crisp.
Crisp. I'm going to talk about Fair Lady. Issue 3 came out. I cannot tell you anything about what's in this comic because I did not read it, because at this point I love this comic so much. Actually, I can tell you a little bit about it. It's basically each one is a self-contained mystery, and this one is a mystery where she's investigating the death of an obvious Conan analog, and a obvious Red Sonja analog comes in to try to kill her. But I didn't read the whole thing because I just really enjoy Fair Lady. It's from Image. It's written by Brian Shermer and illustrated by Claudia Balboni. And I don't know. It's just really strong. She's basically like, it's like if there was a private investigator in the Game of Thrones kind of realm. But then at the same time, they all live in a city that is a hollowed out dead giant that has been a city has been built inside his corpse. It's just neat and unique and fun, but it's a great mystery, and it's each issue is completely self-contained, and it's a lot of fun, and I dig it. Art's good, story's good.
Okay, so there's this new comic called Howard the Duck.
I put that aside. It's a facsimile edition of Howard the Duck number one, and this comic could easily have come out today.
And it is really, really fun.
Just really great. And like, even just like, it's got all the old ads in it and stuff too, which is novel. But like the story and art's by Frank Bruner. Howard obviously created by Steve Gerber. And so it's the 70s Howard the Duck number one, and just in a facsimile edition.
So good.
It's got a sweet Evel Knievel ad on the back cover.
Yep. And even more important, I'm just happy to see that they have these Hostess Twinkie ads in high def.
Oh, wow, really?
So they've like they've digitally retouched and recolored a Hostess Twinkie ad with Spider-Man in it.
Cool.
I would 100% pay $20 for a trade paperback that was cover to cover Hostess Twinkie ads from the Marvel Universe.
But like remastered
in this
coloring
kind of,
and stuff.
It's beautiful.
I mean, I kind of like the old pulpy kind of stuff a little bit. At the same time, yeah, I would definitely do that.
I don't know. I love these.
They're so weird.
I love these digital redos. They look great.
Let me see.
Like, I mean, the art in
I'll
this
be the
looks
judge
beautiful.
Of that. It does look great.
It really does.
Yeah, it's, no, the comic itself, the reproduction is good. They didn't, I mean, obviously it's digitally recolored, but they didn't like overdo the digital effects. It's still colored like an old school comic. So it's that if they had done, if it was like over rendered, I wouldn't be super.
Oh, that would be awful.
However,
they started doing that with some of the Conan books from that era.
Okay. This Spider-Man ad is like amazing.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. It looks great.
Everything can be solved with Twinkies,
they really
Marvel Comics.
Yeah. They really should do a trade of Hostess ads. They should do a DC one and a Marvel one so you don't have to worry about rights.
Here's another one that you don't care so much about, but I absolutely
I
am
just gave up cause
super
of the
into.
Thing. Yeah, that's cool.
Uncanny X-Men number 20. Mm. Still super into this storyline. I'm loving everything that's going on. It does kind of feel like they know that something's going to reset because they are killing people left and right. Two recurring X-Men characters die in this issue.
Wait, who's the second one? I kind of skimmed. I saw one and I didn't know who it was.
Well,
but I should have known because I remembered him when you told me who he was.
Yes, fair. That one.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, that's a big one.
Yes.
Ooh, yeah. I'm super into that.
And he gets killed brutally. Actually, both people get killed in like unpleasant ways.
Yeah.
And it's just a great storyline. It feels really interesting, and I want to know where it's going. And I love all the throwbacks to vintage. Like, you know, he's fighting those weird puppet monsters from the Hellfire Club. You've got a Wolverine versus those dum-dums from that famous X-Men cover. I don't know, man. I love it. I love this book.
Cool.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's rough.
That is rough. Yeah, but seriously, screw that guy. That was a bad deal.
Oh, cool.
Great.
Neat.
Read X-Men.
Yeah, you should read that one. What's the number? It's number 20.
Number 20.
Number 20.
Legacy number close to 1,000. 642.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense.
It was bi-monthly for half of its run, I think.
Okay.
Up until like the first 100 issues, and then obviously it hasn't like continually been published because they canceled a bunch of times.
That's weird.
Yeah.
I would have thought there were more issues.
Also,
since
700
then.
Is a lot of issues.
I guess it's true.
We're just spoiled because now we just have 1,000 issues of. Everything. But like, think about how many more decades Action Comics and Detective Comics have than X-Men.
It's true. And there's going to be that Marvel 1000 coming up for some reason. Oh, whatever the hell that is.
You don't know what the reason is?
Oh,
because it's like pretty obvious.
But the reason is to make money, but I don't know what the reason for it being 1,000 is.
Because DC made a shit ton of money having
1,000 issues. What though?
Well, it's just like saying if Marvel Comics number 1 had been published continuously, it would be at number 1,000.
Are you fucking kidding me?
No. That's what I assumed is the reasoning. I don't like, because it's from the same time.
And if your Aunt Irma had balls, she'd be your uncle.
It's Aunt Irma's balls.
I don't
1,000.
Understand what the fuck. Oh, yeah. My God.
Oh, speaking of things bite I don't me. Understand, Batman number 73 is out, and it apparently involves, like, literally, like, half of this issue is Batman's dad dragging him through the desert and singing the song. What is the song?
Oh, please,
sorry.
Let it be the commercial for
no. It's Give Me a
Armor
Home
Hot Dogs.
Where the buffalo roam. He's like singing like Home on the Range for half of the issue.
I wonder why they fired King.
I don't know. I don't know. It's honestly brilliant. I think nothing works better in comics than sing-song dialogue. It never can go wrong. Remember when they had Etrigan be a rapper? This is like just right there up with it.
Oh my. Damned?
Damned, yeah.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, I don't
also,
know.
Also, there's a Batman Damned pop coming out.
Like a Funko pop?
Yep.
Does it have a penis?
Well, my feeling on the matter is that, of course, it does not.
Yeah.
But I would imagine that now that there's a box for a Batman Damned, there's going to be a bunch of customs.
Yep. Yep. And I not to shit on King, but I am shitting on King's Batman. It's terrible. I don't understand why it comes out, and I'm glad he's going to be done soon.
Yeah.
So he can do other things that are good, because he's capable and awesome.
He is a very capable writer.
Give me another Omega Man or Mr. Miracle or Vision.
It's so crazy how good his other stuff is and how bad his Batman is.
It's brutal how bad it is. Yeah. I'm sorry to say
it's too bad.
It's just unforgivably bad. Excellence number 2 from Image Comics is out. That's a brand new series. It's pretty funky and cool. Cary Randolph is the artist. Brandon Thomas is the writer. I enjoyed flipping through it. It was good.
Yep. Sort of Afro-futuristic version of Hogwarts.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Okay.
If you want to be really vaguely dismissive.
I was stumbling upon, and I think because I'm not a fan of some of those things that you just described, it didn't come to me immediately. Yeah. But that's a good capsulization of it, I think.
That's what it feels like. Yeah. I mean, there is obviously a story within that framework.
Oh yeah.
But if you want to know what the world is that they've built, it's basically an Afrofuturist Hogwarts.
That's cool. Yeah. I dug it.
It's cool.
It looks like just like a very interesting new series, and
One of those books that's good enough that you don't know what the fuck is going on in the first issue. So nice. Like the first issue, I was like, where are we going with this story? There's like your main character's kind of a dick. So you're like, by the end, you're like, I don't know if I like this dude. And then it's like, okay, you start building and they actually give it room to grow, which I think is a little surprising.
That's cool.
In a book like this, because it's dangerous as hell. When you're like trying to hold an audience, a lot of people will resort to just be like, and then he kills a dog, or I don't know, yeah. He blows up and then there's boobs, or
he blows up and then there's boobs.
Please pay attention.
I like that comic. So for me, I picked up the first issue of this and was very excited to read it, and then my cat threw up all over it. True story. So I actually haven't read the first issue yet, which is why I haven't read the second issue. But it looks great, and I will check it out. Sweet. As soon as I am done moving. I'm going to talk about War of the Realms, Captain Marvel, number 7.
There's not a lot of realm warring in this.
No, there isn't. However, there is the Enchantress switches the brains of Captain Marvel and Doctor Strange, and they have to learn individually how to use the other's powers. Also, there's a really great scene of Black Widow killing an alligator in this comic.
Yes, there is.
It's actually quite funny. Kelly Thompson is the writer. Kelly Thompson's awesome. I still am so sad that West Coast Avengers is already done, but you can get your Kelly Thompson fix with the Captain Marvel series, which is great and has great art, in this case by Martello. Nutello
by Nutella. Okay, so this was from last week, but we didn't talk about it because cool. I ordered something that was the wrong thing when I put in my order and screwed up, which is a thing I do sometimes. But this is from Scout Comics. It is Category Zero by Adam Camille, Ton Lima, and Derek Dow. I probably fucked up that first one. This is interesting. Scout is really starting to do some cool stuff. This one didn't give me enough meat.
Ooh, I see. I thought this one was, sometimes you have to kind of embrace the world, and this was 100% just like these regular people doing regular stuff.
Yep.
Like the whole comic is just regular people doing regular stuff. And then at the end you get the Category Zero.
Yep.
And I think it's cool. It's a disaster comic. It's like Towering Inferno kind of comic. And I think that's a cool untapped genre reservoir for comics.
Yeah, exactly. I enjoyed it. I was wondering if this was going to get weird after the second issue kicks in, or if this was going to continue to just be a disaster comic.
That's what
which
I want.
I would be totally all about it. I don't need it to go crazy. Yeah. I don't need it to turn into some sort of magical version of this.
Maybe it will though.
Based on the backup, I'm going to say it's going to go magical.
But the backup is just an advertisement for a new comic.
Oh, is that? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I just flipped to it and I was like, oh, I didn't even look at this.
No, the backup is just literally, it's like a preview for a new series.
Thank God.
Also looks interesting. I think Scout is doing some cool stuff. Scout Comics.
Scout is, I don't know, man. They're making a name for themselves, definitely.
Well, I see this as like literally just like a Airport 77, Towering Inferno, Poseidon Adventure kind of thing. And Poseidon Adventure is probably in my top five favorite movies. I love that movie so much. anyway, Ernest Borgnine. Who knew? That guy was awesome.
Everybody knew.
Everybody knew. That's why
you
want to
know my secret.
Oh, man. All right. Farmhand.
I won't tell you his secret.
I don't want to know his secret. Farmhand number 9 is out, and things are just going to hell in this comic. I'd love to see this as like a adapted in another medium, because I'd love to see how they'd try to pull it off. It's so visually crazy. It's like Plants versus Zombies, except for Plants plus Zombies. No, there's some crazy ass shit in that. Farmhand is a great Rob Guillory's Farmhand. Ringing endorsement.
I would
recommend it in trade.
I absolutely agree. Yeah. I think this is a book that you need to read in trade, because I lost where I was, and then I tried to get in after missing two issues, and I was like, oh fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
I do not know what's happening at all.
Things went to hell. But I do find that from issue to issue, because I'm reading so many comics for the podcast, it gets a little jarring to kind of place myself back in the series. And I feel like if you're a trade aficionado, that might be a really great way to access the world of Farmhand. Shall we talk about, what are you reading?
You talk about Little
Bird. I'm going to talk about Little Bird, which is just visually the coolest looking book on the stands, probably. And I skimmed it. I skimmed this one. It just looks crazy. At the end of the last one, massive crazy shit happened, and this is number 4 of Little Bird, and this also might be another trade, but at the same time, just this Ian Bertram, the artist, this guy is like one of my new favorites. This is so cool, and I'm still not 100% sure what's going on with this world, but I'm 100% on board, and at some point when things have settled down, I will read all of them together and perhaps have more coherent things to say when we launch our new format.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so Drawing Blood number 2 from Kevin Eastman Studios.
Yeah.
Still
kicking ass.
Our pal Ben Bishop.
Yep.
Working on this with Kevin Eastman, Taylor Esposito doing the letters on this. He is unbelievably talented. I love that other
artist who does the cartoony art in it.
Yes. That's
whatever those things are called. The
radically rearranged Ronin and ragdolls.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Those guys. They're cats, though.
That is by... So Ben and Troy Little are doing those guys. Yeah, man. So good. This is such a fun story. It's a fictionalized version of Kevin Eastman's life, where the names have been changed and he's
the innocent.
Yeah, and he's been turned into a different kind of layabout lout. He's more of a in deep with the mob kind of layabout lout than he was in real life that I know of. And you know, Kevin was always kind of a like happy go lucky type and just kind of spent his money wherever he felt like. Mostly wanted to marry a penthouse pet and have a bunch of cars with his turtle's money.
Did he succeed?
He absolutely did.
Yeah, I knew the answer.
He and Julie Strain were married for many years. I think they actually got back together, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh wow.
I think they broke up and got back together.
Cool.
Yeah, he has a very weird life already. You literally wouldn't need to fictionalize much, but this is very fun, and it has craziness in it.
I would also just say we have nothing to do with this podcast, but if you are a Turtles fan, I would highly recommend checking out the cartoonist kayfabe exploration of the 35th anniversary of Turtles number 1. And they kind of do like a deep dive into like what the world of comics was like at that time, and just how kind of game-changing and radical
unbelievable
Turtles was. And it was cool to listen to.
That's awesome.
I was on the plane and I listened to it, and
sweet,
and I was like into it.
It's crazy. Also out this week, I want to just mention, I know people who want this are already in on it, but I had forgotten just how good TMNT Urban Legends was. It's all reprints of the Image Turtles run that was like Larson and a couple of other people. But that storyline is so nuts. I mean,
I didn't even look at it.
It's so crazy. The whole thing is great. It was a really, like, for Eric Larson, I think that might be the best thing he ever did in his entire career.
What?
For me, those stories are insane.
You mean the second arc of this self-titled Spider-Man is not your favorite?
No, I didn't hate it.
No, it was good. The Return of the Sinister Six.
Yeah, yeah. I actually thought
anyway,
that was fun. Blah,
blah, blah. Sorry, but, I derailed you, and I should.
But Turtles, man. This is that arc that has a lot of, like, pathos and a lot of just crazy, crazy shit where Splinter dies. He's resurrected as a bat that has no real memory of his, of anything, but his little, like, I don't know, his
weird
reptile brain basically is left over. And so he's just sort of a shell of himself. No pun intended.
Oh,
turtle pun.
A half Raphael, shell of himself.
Raphael takes over as the Shredder.
Wait, what?
Raphael is the Shredder. Raphael kills the Shredder and then takes over as the Shredder and reforms the Foot Clan.
As a bad guy?
As in between.
Huh.
He's sort of trying to be the best of the worst, kind of, like, kind of make a difference by being...
Wow.
Being in that,
like,
position.
When Daredevil took,
yeah,
over the hand. Except for it happened before.
Just
when
fucked up, though. It's like that Daredevil story where they... Turtles was stolen from Daredevil, and then Daredevil stole from Turtles.
What?
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Yeah.
I love that.
That is pretty cool.
But
I just forget about that weird little, like, germ of the Turtles.
Yeah.
And also...
It's so fun.
From that...
And also the Tick.
Yeah.
Like, that first arc of the Tick back in the day when they met Oedipus, who was the Elektra character, and they tried to steal the Thorn of Oblivion from the ninjas.
Weird.
Oh, yeah. That was a great story.
I learned from that that history podcast that the original, like, Turtles thing was, like, a kind of like a joke, mm-hmm, and that they were really trying to do the Fugitoid was, like, their main thing.
It was... Fugitoid was... Pete's real thing.
Oh,
Kevin had almost nothing to do with Fugitoid.
Okay, and
as far as
folded,
as far as I know,
Fugitoid became part of Turtles, right? Because mm-hmm. I remember an action figure of the Fugitoid.
Yeah. So Pete made. So this is inside pool, because Pete was part of a store that I used to run,
yeah, right,
with,
right,
with one of the Turtles guys called Shellback Artworks in,
yeah.
Yeah. So blah blah blah, but Pete, when the Turtles figures were coming out, they did this promotion where it was like, okay, we're going to really push Fugitoid, and so there's going to be a mail-away Fugitoid figure.
Oh.
And so all you had to do was clip the coupons from, I think it was 10 different action figures. So nobody got that many action figures. It was also not early in the Turtles. It was like late 90s.
Yeah.
So it was like, or it was wherever it was like the end of the era.
Yeah.
And so you had to clip so many fucking coupons to get these things. So, spoiler, Pete has a barn full of these cases. He gave me, I think I have 4 cases of Fugitoids in,
wow,
in my storage unit right now, or 2.
Man, that's
they're
crazy.
Very cool.
That's,
I mean,
cool.
They're awesome. They're,
I,
like,
I have a Fugitoid mini mate.
Fugitoid's a great character. It's,
yeah,
a great design. He's got that classic cute robot thing, and he's got the, like, springy, like, bender arms,
yeah,
and legs, and, like, I don't know. It's,
yeah,
a great character. That one shot was really fun, which was in the same, like, big ass Turtles magazine size.
Oh.
I really enjoyed that.
Man, there's so much of Turtles I don't know about.
It's
I'm learning.
Fucked
I'm learning
up
so much.
How important Turtles was.
Yeah.
Just the level of influence that those 5 dudes had on the world is out of control.
Yeah.
It's out of control. And it's just fucked up that, like, you know, I'm friends with the,
like, yeah.
I'm just like, oh, hey, Steve's calling. That's that guy.
That's
who is
cool.
Like, literally part of, like, a world transforming event. You know, like, he was there at the beginning.
Hmm.
It's nuts.
Nice.
And his stories are nuts and are not suitable for this podcast.
All right.
And I,
well,
love them.
I shall not press further. I will say, however,
but I will have him on at some point just, ooh, to talk about crazy stuff.
Cool.
Also, he has no filter, so I'm probably going to have to edit a bunch of stuff.
Can I hang for that one?
Oh, please.
Nice. I'll be the person who doesn't know anything.
Nice.
And then also, because everybody needs the, you know, the entry, the point of view character.
Yes, that's you.
That'll be me. Unless you know a lot about the Turtles, and then you'll just hate me. But I will bring it full full circle by saying my favorite Teenage Turtles, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles action figure that I had was Usagi Yojimbo.
Oh man,
I love that figure.
And that's the
cool
other part.
Armor. It was neat.
It was, and they made a space Usagi later on.
Yeah, I never had that one.
And he was pretty dope. Liked him.
Cool.
Okay, let's keep going on.
we digress. But this is it. This is content. We want content. So expect more of these diversions in the future.
Oh, God, no. Yes. So Guardians of the Galaxy is out.
It's out. It ends the arc. The first arc is ended, and it is the return of Thanos and the death of an Avenger. Yes.
Oh, it is. Oh, the a douchebag Avenger.
Hey, don't spoil it.
Oh, that literally spoils it. it was Iron Man.
It was. Anyway. He is such a douchebag. Also, it sets up the next arc, which is apparently the death of Rocket.
I know.
Anyway,
Monstrous
number 23 is out by Marjorie Liu and Sana Takeda. That is a cool comic.
Yeah, it's one of those books that if you're not reading it now, you are lost.
That is exactly how I feel. But it looks great.
But it is, continues to be one of the most innovative, crazy comics on the shelves.
Beautiful book. And also, for those of you dying for your Age of X-Men fix, Next Gen number 5 is out.
There you go, Tim. That was for you, the one
Tim.
Person.
Who's Tim?
He's the one person who reads that book.
Oh, okay. Well, it's out, so don't miss your bin. This
last
is,
stop on the red line.
Okay,
number loved two.
The first issue of this. This book is weird and awesome. Last stop on the red line, number two. If you didn't pick up number one, pick it up with number two and read them both because it is crazy and it is set in Boston, so you might even recognize some of the places they're talking about in there.
I can't remember whether or not we got second printings of that, but I think maybe.
Oh,
I hope so because it sold out fast.
Boom. Well, because it was. Freaking bonkers.
It was
great.
So good.
It's like Lovecraftian Boston murder mystery, like all kinds of crazy. I'm going to briefly mention this really interesting adaptation of the Snow White and the Seven Dwarves movie that Dark Horse is putting out. It's by Cecil Castellucci, the writer who did Shade the Changing Woman for the Young Animal imprint, and an artist named Gabriel Bagnoli. Bagnoli, I don't know, whatever. This is way better than I would expect a adaptation of Snow White and the Seven Dwarves film to be. The art is great. The story is the story. If you're a fan of Disney, maybe check that out. Justice League number 2947.
Yeah, the only thing that really matters about the only thing that matters about this issue is that Captain Carrot is in it and has been established as canon in the DC universe.
Okay, I want, and I'm sorry, Scott Snyder, you've been doing some good stuff lately, but I want James Tynion to write Justice League because every time he does an issue, it is awesome. This one is by one of my favorite new kind of DC artists, Javier Fernandez, who has a very Norm Breyfogle kind of look to his art that I dig. And this is, there's some amazing dialogue. And also it has like a ton of like multiverse characters, some of whom you've seen before in the Grant Morrison stuff, like Super Demon. I mean, they all make just kind of real brief appearances because the Justice League is on this like world of heroes. And I think this is just kind of like the last one before this year of villains thing kicks in. It's really good. I dug this issue of Justice League number 26.
I would like to talk briefly about the fact that Mad Magazine has somehow turned into something that I read and laugh and enjoy and am absolutely confused as to why it is so good and funny now. But
it is so good and funny because they went back to the roots of what Mad Magazine was when it was good and funny and just did it with modern people. And it is really funny and really good.
They won.
And
it's you need to pay attention.
It's fantastic. It's worth the cover price, which is, I think,
$6.
Pretty. I mean, I guess that's like magazine price these days, which is. I was at the airport this week and I was looking at magazines and I was like the cheapest magazine I saw was $5.99. So that's about what it is. So it's the cheapest of the magazines. when it says cheap on the cover, it is still technically not lying. It is really good, just really funny. All the stuff that it's like they didn't try to reinvent the wheel. They just went back to the drawing board and were like, what's good? What do people like about this? And there's just gags and lighter side, but with new artists and Aragones
and
still
so
in
many
it,
and so many fun indie guys that are getting a break to do something cool and crazy. It's wonderful.
The Game of Thrones spinoffs is literally like I laughed out loud more than once.
There's a pile of very funny stuff in this, and I don't know, and it has been for pretty much every issue. That last issue that came out, maybe the last one or the one before it, had a complete reprint of Plop number one in it, still for $6, and you got a copy of Plop number one.
Really? In the last one?
I think the last one or the one
That's
before
cool.
it.
I missed that one. Yeah, it's like honestly, like just like flip to a page in this, and it is funny and worth checking out.
Yeah.
Mad number eight.
It's the polar opposite of Mad from 2 years ago, or 5 years ago, or 10 years
the
ago.
The last 20 years, probably.
Yeah, probably.
So somehow, some of my favorites ended up kind of like sinking to the bottom here, and that's pretty much all we have left to talk about. I'm going to briefly mention Aquaman 49 came out, not as it being one of my favorites, but being Aquaman has one more issue to get me to keep checking it out. It's just kind of navel-gazy. It's not bad. The art's good. The story is fine. They're making Aquaman like way more like the movie. So he's like real jokey and kind of devil may care kind of different than how he's been, which I don't hate. The movie was fun.
Honestly,
but just kind of like I want the story to do something. It's just
my favorite Aquaman in history was the one from Brave and the Bold.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
From Brave and the Bold, the cartoon.
Yes, I know exactly.
And I think, like, basically he was like the Tick.
Yeah.
He was, like, very strong, very confident, very just, like, excited and regal and stupid.
Yeah.
And I kind of loved it. Like, I very much enjoyed him being that character, like, being a dumb bro surfer who is very happy and positive, even in the face of anything that makes any sense that he should ever, you know, like
Conan crossed with Spicoli.
Wow. Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's how he should be in the movies, which is close to how Momoa plays him.
A little bit. Yeah. I thought the movie was good. And I like this take on Aquaman. It's just like the story is really just kind of like not doing a lot. And that's the thing that is a bummer to me. Sabrina, the Teenage Witch, number three. Archie Forever. This is just like the straight ahead. Like if the Sabrina TV show was not dumb and satanic, it would be fun and witchy, which is what this comic is, and fun. And it has art from, it's written by Kelly Thompson, who I love, and drawn by Veronica Fish, who is also awesome. And
sweet.
Andy Fish.
That's great. And also, you're probably noticing if you've been picking up DC comics, that our friend Sean's book is huge in all of them. So Curse of the White Knight is getting major publicity. I have read the first three issues.
What?
And they are absolutely phenomenal. I will say that I think the art is even better than the first one, which is saying quite a bit.
Whoa.
The first issue art is nuts.
Cool.
It is sincerely incredible.
Who is it? Who's coloring? Is it Hollingsworth?
Oh, it's still Hollingsworth.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. That's a match made in heaven.
He's one
art.
Of those guys where like, I don't think Sean will use many other people at this point. Like he's just
right.
like,
I mean,
no,
if you could use, I mean, to me, like the echelon, I mean, there's probably a bunch of newer guys that,
I think there are people who are coming up who are up
that
there,
I
but
really know super well, but it's like, to me, it's like Hollingsworth and Dave Stewart.
Yeah. Hollingsworth is just stupidly talented. And also like, I think unlike a lot of people, like I think he, not only can he put his own stamp on things in a way that you always know that it's him, but he also like takes direction. Like if you ask, if you're like, Sean was like, I kind of want to have this toned down and do blah, blah, blah. And he was like, sure, here, this is toned down and it looks like this. And it looks it looks just like him, only with whatever he had asked for, you know?
Well,
super cool.
The high watermark for me is Hollingsworth and Sean Phillips.
Man.
I will be excited to see what, this, I mean, whatever.
I think I've seen it all black and white, but I mean, it is, this story is great and
cool.
And you're going to you're going to go crazy for it. It is really fun. I think it's already been spoiled who it is, but it's going to be great.
Yeah. And speaking of my I'm going to talk about really quickly Skyward number 14 and second arc, which is everybody fighting the people who ride butterflies, and is a lot cooler than, I mean, it's pretty cool. It's like people in a weird gravity-less world fighting basically like really badass guys who fly around on giant butterflies and moths and dragonflies and things like that. Skyward is great. I'm looking forward to the next arc to see where they're going with it. Just a really fun book that I like. Who is the writer? I'm sorry, I should shout out. Joe Henderson writing, Lee Garbett arting.
Arting.
And then closing it out with my favorite colorist,
Rumble.
And two of the books that he colored. I got two Dave Stewart books this week. Rumble number 13, which has a black and white cover, although the inside is beautiful. And David Rubin is the artist, and John Arcudi is the writer. And I love Rumble. And my favorite book of the week has to be Hellboy and the BPRD, The Beast of Vargu by Mike Mignola, Duncan Figredo, and Dave Stewart. Dream team. Dream team. This is cool. It's a Hellboy story set in 63 Earth, somewhere around there.
One of those 62. Years that they haven't used yet.
62. And it is... It's Hellboy. He's an agent of the BPRD. He's investigating like a giant vampire bat, and he fights it, and it kicks the shit out of him. But also, there's some puppets.
Nice.
It's cool. It's very Mignola, but it's Duncan Figredo. I haven't seen Figredo draw Hellboy much since I guess he did a graphic novel, but other than that, since he left the book, and he is my favorite non-Mignola Hellboy artist. I feel like he's the only one who. I feel like Figredo is like...
He's so good.
I think I actually like his Hellboy art better than I like Mignola's Hellboy art. Not counting like the early original
stuff, but I get it.
Because there's a draftsmanship quality to it that like Mignola is more blocky and kind of just... expressive, whereas this is like, what if you took that and then added a draftsmanship quality to it? It's so beautiful.
I agree. I think
Figredo
the thing
is
that's
one of my favorite artists, hands down.
It's
anyway.
Just weird to see it because what he's created is so its own thing. Like his style is his style, and his world is his world. And so sometimes you have artists that it's not that they're somehow better artists than Mignola.
It's
that they have taken what he's done and added a layer onto it. So where he doesn't have X, Y, or Z ability to do whatever it is, like the detail in this book is something that Mignola would never do with his style.
True.
And so it's cool to see it done that way.
But he also does like the Mignola style.
He does.
And when he does it,
it's also just you don't get details, you don't get backgrounds, you don't get all that stuff.
You used to get more, but like it's just his art evolved. But Figredo, I would say his art in this is a little bit in a more Figredo-esque. Like who's better than Figredo? I don't think anybody. I mean, which isn't to say that there aren't people who are just as awesome, like Ian Bertram,
who we
talked about earlier. Or
but
like,
in his world of what he's doing,
oh my god,
it's so incredible.
Yeah,
it's so incredible. He's such a great artist, and it's just so cool to see him doing this stuff. This is what he needs to do.
Yes.
Holy crap! Totally have forgot. We not talked about this book?
Well, you said to save it, and then we piled all the comics
and
on
then,
top of it.
And then, as I had said before, I don't want this to be my favorite book of the week. I don't want to love this book. I don't want to have to fucking talk about this book.
I was not expecting this book to be anything I thought was. It's much like the Batman Last Night on Earth. I didn't expect to like that. This is
where it just feels like it felt like something superfluous that no one asked for. No
which
one was
is
like
true.
Like nobody said, "Oh boy, give me John Romita Jr. doing a retelling of the Superman story."
Yeah.
I don't care.
In the oversized magazine
style
format.
I was like, this is something I do not care about, and then I read it, and it is just crazy good.
It's really good.
Like, and the amount of crazy good that you have to be for me to care about Frank Miller and John Romita Jr. retelling the Superman year one story It has to be really, really, really good.
Well, and for me, it's like I'm not ever going to get wild about an origin of a story that, or like a retelling of a story. So like on one level, I kind of am like, I wish that it was them doing a cool Superman story
that had nothing to do with
that
his
had
origin.
Nothing to do of with course. His origin. However, if you're going to do it and make it interesting, you have to approach it in a way that is different. And they do like a narrative thing with the Superman origin that I don't think I've seen before, which is doing it from the perspective of Superman as a baby. But then they also kind of like do this weird Miracle Man kind of thing with it too, where it's like very almost sinister, but like in a way that isn't sinister.
Yeah, I agree. There are moments in here where, although it's not some sort of dark, you know, like brooding version of Superman that nobody wants, but there's something to it that shows you that he has human qualities and that he's mm-hmm. he has wants and needs and desires like a human, and that obviously that could be horrifying given that he is basically a god.
Yeah.
But it shows the Kents raising him and the way that he interacts with other human beings, and I don't know, it's just uplifting and like it's nice.
But
it's
also
just a great Superman book.
Yeah, and it also like kind of modernizes the origin in a way that where it feels like it, I don't know. Like, I mean, it's
well, he's interacting with like a goth kid, and you know, like he's
I was actually wondering if that goth kid was Lex Luthor, but I couldn't tell if it was or not.
Oh my god, I hope that goth kid is Lex Luthor.
I kind of do too. anyway, it's what we're talking about. We didn't name is Superman Year One by Frank Miller and John Romita Jr. And it is book one. It's a magazine with Danny Mickey and Alex Sinclair. And it is DC Black Label. So it's kind of not necessarily like, I don't know if they'll use it in, outside of like, it will become continuity, but maybe it will. I don't know. Like, who knows? I don't know what the deal with Black Label is.
Black Label is all its own world.
Okay.
So, but the thing with this stuff is that like Sean's world, like what they're calling the Murphyverse.
Is that Black Label too?
That is Black Label.
It wasn't at first, but now
it was
is.
Not. He was doing it before Black Label, but the trade came out as a Black Label book. The next volume is going to be under the Black Label. He's not going to do it in magazine format, but it is going to be Black Label. And all the stuff in there, it lets them have an offshoot world. So this could be the Frank Miller verse.
I read an article that said this
Superman.
Right. And I read an article that said that this is kind of like attempting to be part of the Dark Knight universe.
Okay. That would be totally fine.
It feels a little modern for that, but at the same time.
It's sort of their continuity fix.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know, we have our normal weekly books and all this stuff, but also there are going to be, you know, somebody can write a Frank Miller world version of the Justice League that goes on in this world, maybe not necessarily Frank Miller. You know, somebody could write something in Sean's world. Somebody could write something in the Damned world. You know, like these offshoots all have their own kind of...
Because I feel like Sean's world is kind of like an offshoot of the animated Batman.
It very much is. Yeah. Like, I think Sean would say that that's true as well.
Sean's world, part-time, excellent.
Exactly.
Offshoot of the universe.
I mean, Jesus, he does a podcast about the Batman, the animated series. So, yeah.
He does?
He does.
Nice.
So, if you happen to want to check that out, he and Clay both do do a thing. Clay from who did Poser and a bunch of other stuff.
Nice.
Yeah. So yeah,
cool.
Check those guys out. They do I can't remember what it's called.
What do they like watch the episodes and then talk about?
It's just basically one episode per episode. So
wow.
They talk about a single.
There's definitely yeah. Check that out.
Yeah, I mean because that's the funny thing about Sean that's a terrible secret that I'm probably not supposed to share is that he's really not like that deep into comic continuity.
Yeah.
So he barely knows what's going on.
Well, you're better off.
That's kind of what I think, too.
That's called self-defense.
Yeah. So he knows... So his version of all these characters comes from the animated series, which may be some of the most solid storytelling that DC has ever had. So
yeah. I mean, honestly, like the best... Like I've said it before, I'll say it again. The best possible thing that any comic book publishing company can do is just to say fuck continuity. Like yeah. It's like... It was good when... Comics were 20 years of publishing history. It was fine. But yeah. Like once you got past that, like once you got past 1985, like just fuck it.
Once you get like, past a human lifespan's yeah, worth of comics.
Yeah, yeah. Or a generation
like,
even.
Exactly. Once you're like, well, Spider-Man would be 97 years old now.
Yeah.
Let's not write him as a 97-year-old. So you have to relaunch him all this time. So continuity is silly.
Because they want like it to be in real time in terms of like a monthly publishing schedule, but then they also want it to you they mm-hmm. want you to believe that like 20 years worth of stories happened in 10 minutes.
Yes.
And it's like it just doesn't it's wicked dumb. And they should just cut the shit out and just be like, you know, whatever.
And that's I feel
which
like
is
that's
maybe what Black Label is all about.
I think Black Label is kind of morphing into a bit of an Elseworlds, a new version of Elseworlds. Originally
everything should be Elseworlds. That's yeah. why I loved that not to go too further down the rabbit hole.
Oh, and that's also where all of Vertigo is getting dumped, by the way.
Oh.
Now that Vertigo is dead.
I heard Vertigo, yeah. I heard
Vertigo
a rumor
is
that
dead.
Vertigo is not going to keep happening.
And now that Vertigo's dead, they're going to dump it all in Black Label.
Well, Vertigo, yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
Once, honestly, as soon as Dan DiDio started plundering Vertigo for things that he thought he might like, it wasn't his choice. I'm sure it was Warner.
Well, Vertigo had too much.
But getting rid of John Constantine was like the saddest thing. And it was like, well, once you're like, oh, by the way, John Constantine's now a DC character. It's like, well, then fuck you.
But honestly, I'll jump on the hating Dan DiDio train anytime. But getting Constantine out of Vertigo and back into the DC universe, I thought was really smart because DC. Vertigo had
true
two identities. There was it wanted to be a darker versions of DC Comics characters, which is essentially
or
I guess what's happening here.
But the thing is, it was darker,
it is.
But
yeah,
also
it
smarter.
It wasn't darker.
Smarter was more
mature
important.
Was the idea, but it wasn't
right.
necessarily mature.
There were mature things, but it was written like a literary comic.
But then there was also the Image thing, essentially, or what became yep. the Image thing, which is creator owned. So like then there was Preacher, which are like Preacher being, I think, kind of like the pinnacle of it.
Yeah.
But like, so when they tried to relaunch it most recently, they did themselves a disservice because Vertigo should essentially be DC and then have like,
right.
You know, like how Marvel used to have Epic Comics, mm-hmm. like that kind of an imprint where it's its own imprint. And this is where you create deals that make, but you know,
right.
creators want to do because you get that arm of DC publishing. But as far as like just talking about the continuity stuff, like I just was going to say like that was why I really liked that Doomsday Clock thing that came
yeah.
out the most recent
agreed.
Issue with the metaverse and just kind of like being like, yeah, it all happened. Like Hypertime kind of wanted to do that, but it never
yeah.
really like got embraced for whatever reason. And I think this is just like, that's the way to do it. Just fuck continuity. Like get rid of it. It's stupid. Just,
but I mean, even at that though, it's like a no prize version of continuity where this Manhattan thing is basically him going,
yeah, true,
no, no,
true. That's a good point.
Everything is continuity.
Yeah.
It's just continuity in a different way. You just have to think about continuity in a,
yeah.
in more of a like string theory sense. It's more like this.
Yeah. And I guess maybe if that goes too far, then that can be its own worst enemy. And I just like, I don't
and
know.
And then you wind up with Superboy Prime punching through the pages of your comic book.
Yeah, but you already have this thing where it's like every time a writer, let's use Batman as an example. Like Grant Morrison did stuff with Batman. And
yeah.
Grant Morrison did this really cool thing where he was like, it all happened and here's a timeline that I came up with that like I made work and,
yeah.
you know, and it did kind of. It was, but then as soon as he was done, then it was Tom King's Batman, and it was like Tom King's Batman is its own thing, but they all are supposed to happen concurrently, and
yep.
that is the idea that needs to be jettisoned. Like, they didn't need to happen concurrently. Just, like, this is just the way Batman is now. And then when Tom King is gone from Batman and whoever takes over, then it's just like, this is the way Batman is now. And just deal with it and like make Batman good. Like,
I just want to read Garfield comics where Garfield has been dead for 30 years. Is that so much to ask?
Exactly. But that puts into, that's how preposterous it is. It's just like, why not just have fun? Yeah. Like, they're supposed to just be fun. Like, just make them fun. That's why these Walmart Batman comics are so, because it's just like, it's a Batman story that's happening and it has all of the DC stuff in it. But it's not like trying to pretend that it works with all the other stuff. It's just like, here's a cool artist, here's a cool writer, here's a cool story. It's got Batman.
Yeah.
That's what you need.
I love it. I mean, and that's what Hellboy is.
Yeah. Well, Hellboy.
Except Hellboy is doing this thing where they have to have a year. But I mean.
Yeah. Well, that's how they.
But that's, again, that's a no prize. That's like a. Not who really, fucking though. Cares?
I would argue not really, because Hellboy has now, at this point, that it's the series has ended and literally like with the world ending and being reborn. Like, now it's got a timeline, and so you can basically just tell Hellboy was active from 1945 until at the very least 1992 as just like a BPRD agent. So you can do a Hellboy story anywhere in that timeline, as long as like the people overseeing it don't lose sight of the fact that like this. And I mean, honestly, at the end of the day, like, if it doesn't, you know, Hellboy was actually in. You know,
that one guy is going to be pissed.
Yeah,
but fuck, like, that guy.
But fuck that guy. And at the same time, those guys are also like the guys who make the Hellboy comics. They're taking care to create a strong timeline, and so you can do like a luchador comic, and you can do an old fashioned vampire beast puppet comic, so like the one that came out, which is also super awesome. Anyway, we just probably should.
Oh, and also, another great one. Man, we should do something where, you know what, when we get this new format going, we can go through Hellboy stories and do other stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
This will be good.
Yeah, yeah.
This will be good to talk about some old, awesome stories, because I would love to talk about the Pinocchio story.
Ooh.
That is such a good one-off Hellboy story.
Pinocchio one? Which one's that one?
Yeah, it's the circus of the...
Oh, you know, I actually don't think I read
the name of that one.
Is it a graphic novel?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, one of the hardcovers.
Yeah. Was it that Figueredo did the art on it? Yeah, I actually, okay, I think I own it. I just think I've never read it.
I need to go back to it. Stupid. But it was nuts. It was so good.
That's cool. So we should do that. That would be awesome. I actually just picked up at Goodwill for $1 the Chained Coffin trade, even though I already own it. Like, I was like, it's a dollar. But it's a dollar. I gotta buy it. Anyway, and I also got League of Extraordinary Gentlemen Volume 1 for $1.
Ooh.
That was pretty cool. They like Goodwill thinks graphic novels are comics, like individual issues of comics. So if you ever happen to see one there, you can get it for nothing. They're not in great shape, but like whatever, you know.
They have comics in them. It's great.
They have comics in them, and it is great. And also, we should we're gonna maybe do X-Men Fatal Attractions.
Wow.
Which I'm actually kind of excited to tackle.
Jiminy. Okay, we'll add some of that stuff on. That'll be fun.
That's going to be I'm currently like going through the first volume of the Maggie the Mechanic of Love and Rockets, because I was finally able to track down that, which is really cool to kind of.
It's one of the few that we always keep in stock at the store too. Like for Love and Rockets.
You have the Maggie the Mechanic
one? That's one of the ones that we almost always have.
That's the best one.
I think we usually keep 3 copies and then like reorder it.
Yeah, because it's weird because like with those, it's like there's like volume 1 of the Luba story and then there's volume 1. And the Gilbert stuff, like, we'll talk about that when it's time to talk about that. That was actually going to be part of what we were going to talk about today, but I didn't get far enough into it to really have a substantive.
I think this is cool. Let's do
it. It's going to be cool. We're going to do content and also new releases, and it's going to be great.
Great stuff. Awesome. Well, that's all, and we'll see you next week.
Yes.
All right.
Sorry for the rambling end.
Goodbye.
Bye. Don't need no tea. Don't need no chicory. Don't need the buzz coming.